This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to talk about violence as the Democrat rhetoric escalates. We're going to talk about the United States military taking all sorts of actions right now. Bill Jacobson joins us talking about the Supreme Court, Chip Roy, all that and more coming up on I'm Right. Let's talk about violence. Let's talk about Democrat violence as more rhetoric continues to increase from their side. First of all, understand that you don't commit acts of violence all the time, and you don't wish violence on other people all the time only because you have something morally against it. Me too. It's not that I'm a completely nonviolent person, I admit that, but even our political opponents. You know, if we woke up tomorrow and saw that Joe Biden died, I wouldn't cheer. Wouldn't be happy. I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to sob. I don't care for him. But that wouldn't make me happy. I wouldn't go online and say, woo, he's dead, yes. Just wouldn't occur to me. But that is because we have a different value system than communists do. And the enemies of communists throughout history, this is not unique to America, have always struggled to fully understand that. To a communist, violence is a necessary part of the revolution. It is a necessary part of the revolution. It is so necessary, he will encourage it. Sometimes, really, really subtly encourage it. Sometimes he'll flat out tell people, go commit acts of violence. But to him, because he has nothing morally against it, violence is just second nature. And don't think for a moment I'm only talking about Democrat politicians, you know, elite communists, or I'm only talking about Antifa or BLM, you know, street communist types. This goes for, well, according to polling, the majority of Democrat voters in this country are comfortable with violence. Do I need to remind you of the poll during COVID that showed the percentage of Democrats that believe that you should be arrested and thrown into a camp if you didn't mask up, didn't take the vaccine? The percentage of Democrats that thought your children should be taken away from you? It wasn't 10%. These are normal people. Those are acts of violence. To them, force, violence, it's what you do. You get power, you get the ability to use violence, and you use it. Maybe the violence comes in the form of a deranged street animal. Maybe you've taken control of some government agency, local police force, national police force, whatever it is. When you have the power to physically hurt people in some way, the communist uses that power. Always has, always will. And this is what I continue warning us about on the right. They believe now, because they don't control the government right now, because the Trump administration is making some really solid steps, they believe violence is more necessary now than it has been before. And they are spreading that around, and we're seeing more violence. Now, remember James Comey, former head of the FBI? 8647, what essentially amounts to a subtle death threat, a subtle encouragement for somebody to harm Donald Trump. He knew exactly what it meant. This is not some street animal, some drugged out loser on TikTok, kill Donald Trump. That's the former head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Now let's talk about what happened over Labor Day weekend. Trump disappeared for a couple days. I don't know what he was doing. Didn't matter. But online, on the internet, some weird rumor started that he was dead. Very bizarre, that he was dead. It actually led to a pretty funny exchange between Trump and Peter Ducey. Here it was.
Something completely different, but about a big viral social media trend over the weekend. How did you find out over the weekend that you were dead? You see that?
No.
People didn't see you for a couple days. 1.3 million user engagements as of Saturday morning about your demise.
Really?
You didn't see that?
You know, I have heard, it's sort of crazy, but last week I did numerous news conferences, all successful. They went very well, like this is going very well. And then I didn't do any for 2 days, and they said, there must be something wrong with him. Biden wouldn't do him for months. You wouldn't see him. And nobody ever said there was ever anything wrong with him, and we know he wasn't in the greatest of shape.
Pretty funny. But let's talk about Tim Walz. Hey, look, we could go a lot of different places with this, but let's talk about what Tim Walz said. Tim Walz is the governor of Minnesota. We have 50 states. He's the governor of one of them. Stood up in front of a bunch of Democrats as that Trump's dead rumor was flying. Here's what he said.
You get up in the morning and you doom scroll through things. And although I will say this, the last few days you woke up thinking there might be news. Just saying. There will be news sometime. Just so you know, there will be news.
We know what he's saying there. You woke up hoping that Donald Trump was dead. And hey, he is going to die at some point in time. The governor of Minnesota. It's so open now with Democrat voters, street communists, elite communists. And in fact, Mr. Producer, I want you to play that video one more time for me. And this time, instead of listening to Tim Walz, because Tim Walz is a quack, I got that. I want you to listen as the governor of Minnesota wishes death on the president of the United States openly behind a microphone. I want you to listen to how the crowd responds when he does it. Go ahead.
You get up in the morning and you doom scroll through things. And although I will say this, the last few days you woke up thinking there might be news. Just saying. There will be news sometime. Just so you know, there will be news.
Oh, gosh. That's so funny. Let's hope, huh? Violent people. You have to remember you're dealing with people who view violence differently than you view violence. Remember Ryan Ralph? The guy who was waiting to shoot Donald Trump on the golf course? Ryan Ralph, crazies like that, they hear that kind of rhetoric and they act on it. Remember the guy who flew from California to murder Brett Kavanaugh? He heard people like Chuck Schumer threatening the justices with reaping the whirlwind, and you just ignore that as a standard Democrat speech, but the street animals who are okay with political violence don't view it that way. They view it as marching orders. Senator Marsha Blackburn, Tennessee, just had a 22-year-old woman charged with threatening to kill her. They believe, even the average ones, they believe violence is a necessary means to an end. They have been so deluded, so poisoned, their minds so poisoned to believe that the world is coming to an end. If Donald Trump remains in power, if Republicans get power, this is the end of all humanity. These are Nazis. These are this. All this apocalyptic language, time after time after time after time, has convinced the average Democrat that now, well, I have no choice but to commit acts of violence. And when their little street animals, when their little pets commit acts of violence, the elite communists then run to cover for them as best they can. That tranny shooter we just had in Minneapolis, that horrible freaking shooting, little Catholic kids, NBC issued a public apology for misgendering the tranny. A public apology. And do keep in mind, speaking of that, what have we talked about? Why do Democrats want your guns? Are they naive? You know, because whenever they bring up gun confiscation, we will, because we don't understand what we're dealing with, we'll hold up some facts and we'll say, well, actually, if you look at the highest gun law states, they're the most violent. We try to point out logic and facts, and we wonder, why doesn't that ever work? Why doesn't that work? Those are facts. Well, stop being naive. They don't care about crime. They don't care about mass shootings. They are very, very okay with violence. What they truly, truly care about is that they can't hurt all of us, that they can't do to us what they see other evil countries doing to their citizens. Remember what Australia did during COVID? We saw testimony after testimony of it. Australia built concentration camps and took unvaccinated people and threw them in them. The free Western civilization country of Australia sent government goons door to door to apprehend people and throw them in a concentration camp. What kind of gun laws does Tim Walz want?
When they had a school shooting in Scotland or they had an incident in Australia, they simply made changes. They are just as free as we are. They still have gun ownership requirements, but they have made sure that they don't have these. And since they did those things, they don't have them. We are an outlier amongst nations in terms of what happens to our children. And I refuse to think that that's okay. It's simply not.
Oh, he's not worried about the children. He is, however, very, very, very worried about you and your ability to defend yourself. Just remember, there are violent people among us. We call them Democrats. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. I am uncomfortable that you're still using Pure Talk or Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile. Why aren't you using Pure Talk? Pure Talk, it's one of those no-brainer things. You pay less, okay? Everybody wants to pay less, okay? But what about my service? Pure Talk's on the same network, same towers. Okay, well, what, Jesse, I don't want to switch phones or switch my phone number. Okay, good, keep your phone. Keep your phone number. But I want a new phone. They have that too. Great discounts on new. I just got a new phone from them. Just got a brand new phone from them. Pure Talk is the veteran-led mobile company. There's no reason not to switch. You think it's going to be a pain? It's cake. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. We vaporized a bunch of narco traffickers. Did you see this? Did you see this video? I like that the president of the United States himself put out a video of this drug boat. Apparently there were 11 Tren de Aragua guys and a boatload of yayo heading towards the United States of America, and they are actually no longer with us. And Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth addressed it on the news this morning.
We knew exactly who was in that boat, we knew exactly what they were doing, and we knew exactly who they represented. And that was Tren de Aragua, a narco-terrorist organization designated by the United States trying to poison our country with illicit drugs. President Trump is willing to go on offense in ways that others have not been. And to send that clear signal to Tren de Aragua, Cartel del Sol, and others emanating from Venezuela, we're not going to allow this kind of activity. You're poisoning our people. We've got incredible assets, and they are gathering in the region. And so you want to try to traffic drugs? It's a new day. It's a different day. And so those 11 drug traffickers are no longer with us, sending a very clear signal that this is an activity the United States is not going to tolerate in our hemisphere.
We are gathering. Joining me now, Doug Truax, founder of Restoration of America, former U.S. Army captain. Doug, we're not just there, we're gathering. What's coming?
Well, it is a new day, isn't it? And I just look at this, it's such, you know, on one level you feel like, hey, 11 people got killed, but hey, looks like those guys deserved it. And, you know, any situation we've had previously politically where we've all been like, why is this going on? Why is all this fentanyl coming into the country? Why are the borders open? All these different things. And I think everybody in the country now has been touched by something somewhere by the fentanyl crisis. Somebody they knew died or knew somebody that knew somebody and things like that. And you watch these numbers and you say, when are we going to do something about this? And Biden was asleep at the wheel. I think back to, you know, even Obama just let these guys do whatever he wanted to do, just kept growing and growing and growing. Trump, first term, you know, under fire all the time, had 4 years to think about it now, and now he's back. And super thankful for Secretary Hegseth, too. But I think all of us as Americans feel like, you know, the number one job of the government is to protect the people. And we weren't being protected in a lot of ways. And however you feel about foreign interventions, you know, I know you were, you served and all that, as did I. And so we have our thoughts on being deployed and things like that. But when you get straight down into, hey, these guys are here to hurt us. They're here to hurt our kids. They're making money off of pain and suffering in our country. And our government has previously done nothing about it. So all of a sudden, those guys get taken out. And, you know, it's got to create, releasing the video is genius, right? Because you want anybody on the other end of Venezuela or wherever to look at that video and think to themselves, I don't know about this anymore. It seemed like it was so easy before, just avoid the Coast Guard. And now the stakes are much higher. You might just get blown out of the water. And those guys didn't even know what happened, right? It just happened to them. And so their buddies are going to watch that, think about it. You know, you know how it is in the military too. I'm sure with their ranks, you know, it gets around the soldiers and they're like, I don't know, it's not so safe to go anymore. And hey, boss, I'm calling in sick today, as opposed to that next drug run. And, you know, that's what we need. We need some heavy resistance going back the other way. And it's a new day. And I'm super happy to see it. I think most Americans are, for sure.
Doug, do we believe, from what we're seeing right now, that this is just about blasting some narcos? Or do we believe, as Maduro very clearly believes, that this is about a potential regime change in Venezuela? I mean, moving 4,000 Marines and sailors off the coast is not a light show of force.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it sends a message that if we wanted to do it, we could do it. And I think that that's always been the message, you know, as you know, being in the military, you always want to be in a situation where you're completely prepared to do the thing you have to do, but you're kind of hoping you don't have to. But the simple fact that you're prepared to do it changes people's behavior. And I think that's probably the case with Maduro over time here. He's getting put on notice that you can't just do whatever you want going forward. Regime change, you know, I kind of regret all those neocon decades where it's like, hey, let's go do this, let's go do that. I'm personally far away from that thought, but I think what does happen is people start to behave differently when they realize that if we wanted to do it, we could do it. So you should start thinking differently in Venezuela.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Okay, I want to switch and talk about something you will be more experienced with than I will. Chicago. Trump went out and said, we're going in. Here he was.
Mind up on Chicago, though?
Well, we're going in. I didn't say when. We're going in. When you lose, look, I have an obligation. This isn't a political thing. I have an obligation. When we lose, when 20 people are killed over the last 2.5 weeks and 75 are shot with bullets. So let me tell you a little story about a place called D.C., District of Columbia, right here where we are. It's now a safe zone. We have no crime. It's in such great shape. You can go and actually walk with your children, your wife, your husband. You can walk right down the middle of the street. You're not going to be shot, Peter.
Okay, Doug, you know Chicago better than I do. Obviously, I love the place, but you know Chicago better than I do. I have grave concerns, and my concerns are because of this. The feds control D.C. completely. The feds do not control Chicago. Chicago, from the top down, Pritzker, Brandon Johnson, has a completely hostile political class that is not going to use the CPD in ways they probably should. They're already calling for the citizens to rise up. I consider this a completely different threat environment, and I'm worried about the safety of our guys. Not cleaning up of crime, I'm all fine with that, but I'm worried about the National Guard trying to replicate in Chicago what they did in D.C. Am I crazy?
No, you're not. I think that that's the best point, is that it's not D.C. D.C. has a different set of circumstances. The south side of Chicago is where most of this happens. Now, Chicago's gotten a lot worse. And, you know, as you said, I know Chicago, lived there for 23 years. I'm in Florida now, made the move, but it hasn't been that long. Just was in Chicago for a wedding a couple weekends ago. Had to go downtown. Sad to see what's happened even downtown. But you get to the south side, where all the where most of the violence happens and these killings. It's you can't believe it's our country. I had to go for a long period of time down to University of Chicago Hospital. I had a sick relative down there, and you had to drive through the south side. And I've been through all the other Inglewood and Lawndale and everything else, and it's just crazy what has been going on for decades there. And this is really, it's just an endemic problem with the Democrats. They've created a situation where they're just looking for votes. They don't care. So they've taken family out of the black community. Education is horrible. There's way less emphasis on our Christianity and religion. And so you have a situation where they're basically just doing the best they can to farm votes down there. Because, you know, in Illinois, downstate, it's very red. And so the Democrats have to, especially in statewide races, you know, with Pritzker and the Senate races, they have to really manufacture as many votes as they can in the city. So that's been the emphasis over the years, and they've really just neglected everything else. As long as those guys will keep pulling along with them, which I sincerely hope at some point there'll be the uprising politically against these guys in Chicago. So that's been the problem, and it's going to keep going until they stop it. But to your point, though, about having the military there, yes, it's a different environment. I think, though, you could say it's such, the South Side is so vast where all this is happening. But if you were very careful about it and very strategic, what happens when you put the uniform people on the ground, it just calms things down. You don't expect them to do any real policing, and it gives the opportunity for the police around them to go after the guys that are kind of in their caves at the moment, right? So that would be the only approach you could get it done. But then you get into, like, is there a declared emergency and stuff like that? And I personally, back to what I said in that previous segment about Venezuela, you know, the first role of government is protect the people. And these guys, Pritzker and all these guys, we've watched all these Democrats all these years, they are completely out there now. They have no idea what it means to look out for their own people, obviously, or they would have done something by now. And I applaud President Trump for pushing it, making it a huge issue. But to your point, we got to think about this one very clearly. That's probably why President Trump said, you know, it's on the way, because they probably haven't, they're grappling with, you know, what's the mechanics of doing something like that in Chicago.
Can we fix it? Look, obviously Trump has very sharp people around him. I'm sure you're right. They're coming up with a plan. Let's say we get the NG in there and they've got it locked down and cleaned up. What stops all that shooting, all that mess from coming in the second the National Guard guys have to go home to their wives and their jobs?
Yeah, that's the question. And that's partly why I lived. I took my family and got out of Chicago, because the will to fix it over time is just doesn't seem to be there. And so it's just the classic, you know, political case of just at some point you have to have enough people that had always voted Democrat no matter what say, you know, we're going to do something different. And I've always been watching every election cycle. You know, we're at Restoration here, we do a lot of campaigns, right? And so I've always watched every election cycle. You know, you have the city council meetings, and you have the black folks coming in, and they're just like, you got to change this, you got to fix this. And I'm always thinking, maybe there's going to be enough of them that won't vote Democrat, but the numbers don't play that out. So I'm just hoping at some point that people are going to say, you know, the Democrats are basically want crime in some ways, and the Republicans will stop it. And until that happens, until that mentality comes in, it's a major problem. Because to win statewide, you get a new governor and a new approach in Illinois, you know, you can count on the downstate people for sure and some of the collar county areas. But when you have such a heavy population inside Chicago that's just dead set on voting Democrat, it's a very difficult environment to change, just being honest. So I'm always prayerful, hopeful, but, you know, doesn't look great overall. But, hey, it's their problem. It's, you know, they got to do something about it. They have all these people dying, and they're supposed to be doing something about it. So good for Trump for calling them out. And now, you know, Pritzker's got a PR problem on his hand because it looks like he's defending people dying. So I don't know. We'll see what happens on that one.
Doug, thank you, brother. I appreciate it. Bill Jacobson's going to join us. We have Supreme Court matters coming. But first, I want to talk to you about your estrogen levels. Sorry, they're too high. It's in your water. It's in the plastics. You shower in it. We shower in synthetic estrogens. And maybe the most eye-popping statistic I've ever heard in my life, just crushing, is that the United States of America has lost 50% of its testosterone in the last 50 years. Half a century, half the testosterone. What's that look like 50 years from now? We won't even be a country anymore. You need to change it. You. Without sticking a needle in your friggin' arm, you need to change it. That's what Chalk is here to do with natural herbal supplements. Clinically tested. 20% increase in your T levels in 90 days. Go to chalk.com/JesseTV. Get a subscription. you are 90 days away from feeling like a new person. It's not like I want you to take my word for it. You will know. Your brain will clear up. Your energy levels are going to go through the roof. You're just going to be in a better mood all the time. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
We saw the appeals court rule against President Trump's tariffs, but they haven't pulled them off. Like, they're still in place, as I would assume President Trump goes to the Supreme Court to appeal this. What are your thoughts on this ruling?
It is an emergency, and we have to, the president has to be allowed to do this.
We think we're going to win at the Supreme Court. We are close to a tipping point where we could have financial instability due to these large and persistent trade deficits. So we are trying to head off a crisis.
Okay. Tariffs, no tariffs, this or that. I don't know. We're not getting into that right now. What I want to know is, why is this going to the Supreme Court? What are the laws? What's the legality of all this? That was a hard word to say. Joining me now, Bill Jacobson, Cornell University Law Professor, founder of Legal Insurrection. Okay, Bill, why is this a court issue? What's happening? Why is it at the Supreme Court? Please make us smarter.
Sure. Well, the authority that President Trump invoked for his tariffs was an emergency authority that the president has to deal with various international emergencies. And what the court ruled was that even if the statute applied, even if he properly invoked an emergency, the statute doesn't provide for tariffs. So he did something that is beyond his authority under the statute, assuming the statute even applies. So that was really the ruling. And the Supreme Court's probably going to have to decide, because this was a ruling by the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. We don't talk about the Federal Circuit very much. It's the circuit that has jurisdiction over international trade disputes, among other things. So this will go, I presume, to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's going to have to rule. Assuming a president properly invoked these emergency powers, do the emergency powers include tariffs when tariffs is not mentioned in the statute? And that's going to be the issue.
Okay, Bill, you're on the Supreme Court. Do they?
I think it's within the president's power. There is enough language in the statute. The statute does not purport to be exclusive to the remedies listed in the statute, and the president has some flexibility. So I think he's going to win in the Supreme Court, but I don't have a high degree of confidence in that I might on other issues that you and I sometimes talk about. I think it's going to be a close call. I think ultimately the Supreme Court will rule that the statute gives the president enough authority to fashion remedies to deal with the emergency, and that tariffs can be part of it.
Bill, another one heading to the Supreme Court is Trump's use of the Alien Enemies Act to deport gangbangers and criminals. But I'm very, very confused, Bill, because I thought we already had a decision on this. Why do we need a second decision? I thought all these decisions were final. What's happening?
Well, the prior decision by the Supreme Court essentially sent it back down to the lower court, sent it back down to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. And that was what happened. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, a panel of the Fifth Circuit, has now addressed it and has said that the president did not properly invoke that act because what is happening with this Venezuelan gang does not constitute an invasion as required by the statute. But I think that may not hold up even in the Fifth Circuit, because within the last hour or two, I saw that one of the judges on the Fifth Circuit, which is a large bench, I don't know how many judges they have, but more than a dozen, said, hold off. We want to reconsider this. We want to withhold what they call the mandate. Don't send this back down to the lower courts to implement yet. So my guess is that this is going to go to the full Fifth Circuit. And I think the full Fifth Circuit will find that the president is the one who gets to decide if there's an invasion, not the federal court. And certainly what has been happening with Venezuela sending gang members here for the purpose of subverting our country is sufficient for the president to reach that judgment. So I don't think it's going to go to the Supreme Court right away, because I don't think it's going to survive the full Fifth Circuit. But if it does, we'll be back on the merits in the Supreme Court, whereas last time we were dealing with kind of emergency injunctions and things like that.
Pete Hegseth, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, announced that he's grabbing 600 DOD, Department of Defense lawyers, and he's going to have them be immigration judges. One, I'm a little dumbfounded we have 600 freaking lawyers at all in the DOD. And two, how does this work?
Well, I think it's a really important move, because one of the things that the left has done, the Democratic Party has done, is they understood the weak point in the immigration system. Our immigration system and legal system is not equipped to deal with millions and millions of asylum cases and millions of cases. It's just not equipped. So if you flood the system, even if these claims are frivolous, you essentially bring the system to a halt. And that's what's happened. So what he's doing is he is adding 600 judges to process cases. How many they can handle, I don't know, but it's going to be tens of thousands more than they can handle before. And so that's really important, because that's the game the Democrats played. Flood the system, open the borders, bring in so many people who are taught to claim asylum, which is at one point was a legitimate claim. It was meant people being persecuted abroad, typically for religion or ethnicity. And they figured out, as soon as you get here, claim asylum. And it's going to take years for you to work your way through the system. Then you ramp that up with open borders, and the immigration system's just completely overwhelmed. I don't think 600 is enough. Probably need 6,000 or 10,000, but at least they were able to free up 600 DOD lawyers, people who are probably, I don't know why they have 600 either, but they apparently they have 600 they can spare. So they've probably got another 600 or 800. People in the military have legal problems. There are issues with regard to bases and transportation and international things. So it doesn't surprise me there are a lot of lawyers in the Army, in the military. But I'm glad they freed up 600 to start processing these cases and getting people who have no right to be here out of here.
Bill, do you have any base of knowledge on how long, I know it's a dumb detail, how long these cases take? And I'm sure they vary, of course, but in general, is this an hour that you have to spend having to hear, you know, why Lupe gets to stay? Is it a week? How long does it take for each person?
Yeah, well, that's one of the big issues. The whole court process can take months or years, but the actual hearing itself can be truncated. And so I don't think they need a 10-week trial for every asylum case. That's, of course, what the Democrats would like. They would like to completely bring the system to a halt. I think most of these people will probably get an hour worth of hearing, and that's it. But that's a lot when you're talking about millions of people. You're talking millions of hours of an immigration judge's time. And that's why the emergency orders and the attempts to expedite people out of the country are so critical and so important. And that's why some of the court decisions getting in the way of that, of course we want due process, but are we really going to give due process to 10 million people who cross the border under Biden? Virtually none of whom have a legitimate claim. We might as well, just set a match to the country if that's what we're doing. So this is a really, people talk a lot about a constitutional crisis. Well, I think we've got a crisis in the immigration system that we are giving people rights who have no right to be here on such a volume that it's essentially shutting down the system.
Bill, as always, thank you, sir. Appreciate you. All right. There's a government funding deadline coming. We're going to talk to Chip Roy about it, about how badly we're about to be screwed. Before we talk to him, have you subscribed to our YouTube channel yet? Look, it's free. Put out these little videos, highlights and things. YouTube.com/JesseKellyDC. Again, it doesn't cost anything. Just go click the beep. Probably makes that sound. Click the beep subscribe button. Talk to Chip next. All right, well, there is a government funding deadline coming. No, I promise. Hold on, hold on. I promise. It's actually September 3rd, and you're watching a new show on I'm Right. This is not a repeat. We haven't screwed it up. There's a government funding deadline coming, and nobody in the GOP is on the same page, and blah, 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 blah. We all know exactly how it's going to go. They'll run it right up to the deadline, forcing everybody to sign some gigantic pile of crap until we're all bankrupt and our dollar isn't worth two nickels. Joining me now, the great Congressman Chip Roy, now candidate for Texas Attorney General. Well, Chip, did I get any of that wrong? Because I'll tell you, I feel like I've seen this movie before.
Wait, you mean to tell me that every September, we're not getting a different script from the producers here in Hollywood for ugly people, as they say about Washington, D.C.? Look, here's the thing. Here's the good news, right? Now that we are 8 months plus into the president's administration, we moved through and got the CR done in March. Now, most of us don't love CRs. Right? Hey, guys, do your job. Get an appropriations bills passed. I'm one of those. I think we should do our job. But remember that the problem with the appropriations process, the spending process, we have to go through the Senate, and Democrats in the Senate are crazy. So you got to get seven votes from Democrats in the Senate to move something through. So that's why we ended up with a CR in March. A lot of conservatives who don't like what we call continuing resolutions that keep funding government at the previous levels, they don't love those things. But let's remember that we have the Trump administration in charge of all of the policies and the execution of those policies in the administration in the various agencies. Why am I giving all this background? Because it is my considered judgment that we're going to need to get comfortable with continuing resolutions being our friend. We do our job in the House. We pass bills that cut spending. We're doing that, not as fast as I would like, not as much as I would like, but we are moving bills that reduce spending. In the end, the Senate's going to say no to that for the most part. We might be able to force their hand on one or two of them, but probably not. So ultimately, if we end up with a continuing resolution, for fiscal hawks like you and me, that's actually kind of a win. Because if we can hold spending at basically the 24 spending levels, then we're holding it flat and we're actually cutting it back in terms of inflation. So we'll see what happens in September. I would ultimately support a continuing resolution at current levels. Because honestly, Jesse, if we passed a 10-year continuing resolution and never came back to Washington, that would probably be a good thing, right? Because we would just hold spending flat for 10 years and we could grow out of it. So we'll see what happens in September. A lot of work to be done, and we got a lot of debates to have in the next couple of weeks.
Chip, as you have told us before, because it seems to happen a lot, you mentioned the Senate puts a stop on these things. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. We supposedly have control of the Senate. Why does the Senate stop any reduction in spending? I understand those dorks in the Senate are not going to cut as much as I want cut. I'm not an unrealistic person. We can't cut anything.
Well, we have two problems. We have Republicans who pretend to be Republican and who will spend money and fight us at every turn. We had to navigate those Republicans when we were moving the bill that's the reconciliation bill that became the big, beautiful bill, right? So we had to navigate Republicans that wanted to spend more. We held that in check. Democrats, they want to fight us at every turn. So to get seven Democrats to get to the threshold of 60 under the current Senate rules, you've got to convince Democrats to go along, and they have no interest in working with us. They want to say the sky is falling, that we're taking away benefits from old people and women and all the parade of horribles that they want to put forward, rather than working with us to actually deliver something that's fiscally responsible. So that's what we have to work with. I mean, look, I got to be honest. We ought to be pushing the Senate on why it's adhering to the 60-vote threshold rather than forcing them to have actual filibusters to stop the progress. So those are things we got to talk through. But right now, we can't get something through the Senate without them getting 60 votes.
Are we going to get a decent member of Congress when you leave and go become Attorney General, or is it going to be some nerd that I'm going to have to savage on this show all the time?
Well, first of all, I need to go earn the votes of the people of Texas to be the Attorney General. I hope I will do that as a former prosecutor and the former first assistant Attorney General. And frankly, someone who I think has demonstrated a commitment to conservatism and the rule of law and securing the border and going after corporate cronyism and Chinese communist lands, or like today, introducing a bill to ban stock trading. I think I've earned, hopefully, the trust of the people of Texas. And if I do, and I'm moving on, hopefully the people of Texas 21 will send somebody really solid. But look, it's up to them. Someone's got to go earn it, okay? You can't buy it. You can't come in from on high. You got to go earn it and talk to the people. And look, the odds are never great because the members of Congress, statistically speaking, have not been that good. But I do trust the people of Texas 21. They're a good, solid group of people, and hopefully we'll find somebody solid to send up there.
Tell me about this stock trading thing. I know you're on this. I know Tim Burchett's on this. The decent people are on this. It's amazing to me this is something that can't get done. Even the savages who were part of the Democrat Party base, some of them want this to get done. It's horrible that members of Congress are allowed to insider trade with knowledge they have that we don't. It's against the law. How is this not already passed?
Yeah, it should have been passed a long time ago. I will say this is a weird situation or strange bedfellows. I introduced legislation 5 years ago with a Democrat who's currently running for governor in Virginia. We disagree on most things, but she and I, Abigail Spanberger, we agreed on this. We were sitting down, we had a beer, we were talking through it and said, yeah, let's go do this. So we were the first, we led and we said, hey, this is a big issue. We had 3, 4, or 5 other colleagues who had different bills. So we now have merged all those bills together into one bipartisan consensus bill. When I say bipartisan, Jesse, I mean, this is me standing on the same stage with Pramila Jayapal, with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, with other of the 4 far-left members of Congress, and conservatives like Scott Perry, Tim Burchett from Tennessee. We've got a great, Ana Paulina Luna, we've got a great group, and I think we're going to force the hand now. Look, the arguments we get on the floor are pretty ridiculous. Members of Congress will come forward and say, well, our salary's not good enough, so we need to be able to trade stocks to be able to pay for our kids' college or do whatever. To which I say, we can have a debate about congressional salaries, right? They've been frozen for 15 years. That's up to the people to decide, and we got to decide what to do. But to say that you're going to day trade, like engage in stock trading on the very subject matters you're entrusted to objectively go vote on behalf of your constituents, if you want to trade stocks on a daily basis, then get out of Congress. There's 330 million Americans. We're 435. You don't want to be in Congress? Then go home. That's fine, right? So I'm not sympathetic or moved by that. And I will tell you one last point. Those of us who were vocal about it, we're owning it. We're saying we should ban it. And it's a 90-10 issue. My colleagues who don't like it, I promise you, they're not saying that very loudly because they know their constituents won't agree with them.
Chip, what's the status of the Freedom Caucus? It's been a pleasure watching it grow over the years into something that is now a headache for GOP leadership, which I love. Is it still growing? Is it still strong? Is it getting watered down as happens over time?
Actually, I think it's never been as strong as it is right now. And I say that with all due respect to my very good friends, Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan, those who founded it. And remember, I was on Capitol Hill as Ted Cruz's chief of staff. When the Freedom Caucus did not exist, but we were meeting with what would become the Freedom Caucus. And then the Freedom Caucus got created about the time I left working for Ted. I was back in Texas. I was actually working in the AG's office as the first assistant attorney general. And then the Freedom Caucus was founded and it started to have an impact. Well, then I get there in 2019, I join it, some other great folks join it. And we've had, I think, a very outsized impact in shaping the direction of policy to try to shrink government, shrink spending. Now, not as much as you want or I want, but forcing everybody to deal with these difficult issues. It's as strong as it's ever been. Now, I'm leaving to go home to Texas to hopefully be attorney general if I earn that right. Ralph Norman is going to South Carolina running for governor. Andy Biggs running for governor of Arizona. Byron Donalds is running for governor of Florida. 2 or 3 others that we might lose. But we've got new people coming in. We have some young folks in there that have been a part of the fights. Let me give you 2 examples. Andrew Clyde and Josh Brakeen joined with me and Ralph Norman in the budget committee, and we voted down the big, beautiful bill in the face of all of the arrows and all of the heat coming at us because it wasn't doing enough on the Green New Scam subsidies, and we weren't sure it was going to deliver on the Medicaid reductions that we thought were so important. So we fought. And we held the line, and then we got some real changes in the right direction. Those are some younger guys and guys that aren't leaving. There's some good folks in the Freedom Caucus, but we got to grow its ranks. We need good people to run. You know, we need solid conservative Freedom Caucus warriors to join and come up here and join the fight.
Thank you, Chip. Appreciate you as always, man. Lighten the mood. Next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And look, flyovers get me. Military flyovers have always gotten me. I guess I'm just the ugliest of ugly Americans. When I'm at a football game and it happens, they get me. They did one for us when we were in Kuwait getting ready to go into Iraq. It's one of the coolest freaking things ever. And Trump met with the Poles today and honored the Polish leader and honored a fallen Polish fighter. And the formation you're going to see overhead, don't worry, they didn't screw it up. It's called the missing man formation. It's what you do when you're honoring a fallen hero. Pretty cool. I'll see you tomorrow.
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.